Particularly uninviting scene. Yes, watch. Gran stepped to the bracken, turned slightly, and waved a hand. There was a rustling like that of distant whispers, and the thorns parted into a clearing nearly 3 feet wide. Even for Gran, that was impressive magic. I stepped through the bristling mass into something completely unexpected. It was a fifth, smaller terrace that was hidden to the world. The fog was thinner, perhaps due to the incline we'd climbed. The border of the terrace was a low stone wall that looked to be at least a century old. Trees held the wall together at sporadic points, and a dizzying array of species loomed overhead, knitting together almost totally. A small oval space remained clear of the riotous growth, letting the stars wink down at us in mute witness to our trespass. "Should we be here?" I asked, my voice dropping on its own. There was a sacred feel to the small space. Even standing there felt like a violation of some sort. Gran smiled, waving gently at the clusters of graves. "They don't mind. Trust me, you'll see." She began striding confidently to a single headstone on the right side of the cemetery. Even in the glimmer of my witch senses, I could still tell that there was something new about the grave. We stopped in front of the newest grave, the one that had drawn my attention. I sighed, drawing Gran's attention. "What is it?" Gran looked at me with mild curiosity. "I don't know. I'd sort of expected something more witchy, you know? Like a 200-year-old crypt or something with a worn stone angel on top and creepy eyes that followed us everywhere. This seems rather tame," I finished. I sounded childish even to myself, but Gran merely laughed. "Did you hear that, Maggie? She thinks you're pedestrian. The nerve of young people," Gran said to the space around us. A swirl of white light coalesced before us, hovering 3 feet above the plain headstone we stood near. The outline of a woman grew more substantial with each second, until a transparent replica of Maggie Freeman hovered before us, hands on hips, and a rueful smile on her luminous face.
"About time you brought the kid, Tess. I wondered when she'd put it all together and start doing the heavy lifting."
Maggie Freeman, now deceased, had passed into the afterlife less than 2 years ago, after 4 decades as the premier real estate agent in Halfway. To call her a fixture was an understatement. She ushered countless families into their vacation homes, cabin rentals, and purchases of God's little green acre over the years. She died after a short illness, well into her mid-70s, and more than a few people still missed her. I goggled at the shape before me, finally closing my mouth and regaining some measure of control.
Hi, Maggie.
I'd known her since childhood. It was taking me a moment to process that she now hung in the air like a gossamer carving made of light. She was beautiful. It seemed that her ghostly figure was tailored to look like Maggie in her youth. She'd been quite the looker.
"How yourself, kid?"
Maggie's spirit stretched and gave a dramatic yawn.
"How's tricks?"
"Not as good as they should be, and by that I mean too many. You?" Gran asked, settling in for a chat. They'd been friends for decades.
"Boring month. Not many visitors. There are benefits to being dead, I suppose, but I do miss my Friday nights,"
Maggie said, her breezy voice wistful.
"Friday nights?" I interjected. "What in the world could an old lady do on a Friday night?"
Maggie preened a bit, then laughed.
"I should clarify. I don't miss Fridays as much as I miss my evenings with Case."
Case? You mean the judge, Mr. Caselden?"
I sputtered. I didn't like where this was going. Our county judge was a hale man in his early 70s who had no plans of retiring. He was also, now that I thought about it, a rather snazzy dresser, with good hair and all of his teeth.
"That's him. It's hard to taste wine when you're dead. Even harder to recall when we'd finished dinner and then..."
Maggie began, but I interrupted her with a half squeal.
"Ew! Stop it! I mean, I know you're a woman and all, but still, I don't want to hear..."
I began. Now it was Maggie's turn to interrupt me, which she did with a wicked, ghostly smile.
Oh, what that man could do with his hands. He was also rather good with his gavel. Knew his way around a woman, that's for sure. Maggie said with utter delight as horror raced over my features. Gran laughed giddily while I waved my hands and kicked my feet in hilarious revulsion at the body revelation. Speaking of men, yours is a fine-looking fellow, Carly.
You've seen Wulfric? I asked in surprise. I wondered how it was possible that a ghost could know Wulfric.
We all have, dear. That man gives off heat in any spectrum, be it the land of the living or dead. Plus, he's been around for so long. We look in on him now and again, and not just because he's so pretty, Maggie confessed. Who is we? I wondered how many lecherous old women could be buried in my town. Maggie waved airily, and tiny motes of cool white light trailed behind her hand to dance in the cool night air. It was a hypnotic effect, and I had to force myself to look away. It was sinking in just how close I was to the spirit world. I think that if there was a veil, it was indeed thin.
You know, when I was alive, I would say that I was old, not dead. Now I'm dead, but I'm still a woman, and I can appreciate that tall, dark of water you've got for yourself, Carly. But he is handsome. Anyway, this place is filled with the dead. So are the lands around you, but Tess knows that.
You will too, Carly. As you become more aware of your own power, you're going to find that the mountains are crowded with souls, and not all of them are as happy as I am. Maggie gave a ghostly leer. Or the other ladies who drift about watching Wulfric. Who would have thought that a Mohawk and Viking would make such a lovely creature?
Hey now, you dirty old woman, I said, but I was smiling.
Maggie held up her translucent hands in mock supplication. But to other matters, I suppose you're here about the trouble. She turned silently in air to focus on Gran.
The very same. I'm concerned, Mags. There are things afoot that I don't like the looks of.
Gran's lips were pressed together. I didn't like that kind of concern on her face. It boded ill for Halfway. And me.
Well, let's start with what you've seen, and I'll tell you what I've heard. Sound good?
Maggie floated toward the ground, crossed her legs, and sat in an invisible chair of some sort. It was quite a trick. To my surprise, Gran followed suit after a careful wave of two hands. Sit down, Carly. I leaned back, feeling with my fingers as if searching a lake bottom for lost treasure. To my utter shock, a hard surface met my touch. Gran smiled at the wonder on my face, then nodded that I should sit. I eased back, a stupid grin on my face at the display of magical skill. Gran really was light years ahead of me in terms of her power. I'd always known it, but something like this, so casual and yet complex, told me I had a long way to go before I understand that woman's magic. Gran began to make points with one hand, each gesture definitive and brisk. A dead body to start, drained of blood, possibly groomed over time. She was young. Maggie bristled visibly at that. A second body, this time a bystander of some sort who may have gotten in the way, but could simply be a crime of opportunity. Thirdly, an old vampire who claims to be the last of his clan, hailing from the coast of Virginia. He gave Carly the name Philip, but it could be a lie. Tell Maggie your impression of the creature, dear. I cleared my throat, causing me to drift slightly in the air. It was like being the captain of a rather small airship, I thought, and the feeling left me a touch queasy and giddy all at once. He certainly has presence. He's a native man, quite commanding. There's a cloud of sadness and frustration around him.
That would follow. You know how vampires are about the familiar structure, Maggie said, her voice soft but steady.
Yes, well, that isn't all, unfortunately. You see, the circus has come to town, so it would be remiss of me not to mention the clowns, Gran finished.
Clowns? Did you say clowns?
Maggie's face blurred momentarily with the question. Indeed, I did. There are clowns and a circus and a ringmaster of some makeup that isn't fully human. My senses tell me precious little, but my eyes explain enough that I think we need to visit the circus again, Gran said. The ringmaster clearly augments the show with something magical, but it isn't our kind of power.
Necromancy? Maggie asked, her brows pulled together in a thundercloud of disapproval.
Apparently, even the dead hated necromancers. A nice group, those people. They offended the living, dead, and everyone in between.
Blood necromancy, I assume?
At Gran's nod, Maggie continued.
Nasty business, that. I mean, what we're doing right now is a modest form of necromancy, after all. You must have some insight based on your magical outreach.
Gran considered that for a moment while I remained silent, listening.
My senses tell me that there is something powerful and repugnant at play. I know that there are many elements to what is happening in Halfway.
Oh, indeed, Maggie enthused in her soft voice. We've seen activity across a spectrum unlike any other time. Lots of... they're not half-bloods, but they aren't really in either world.
Like Wulfric? I asked, wondering if his aura seemed, to Maggie, to be in two worlds at once.
She shook her head, definitively. No, these are beings who are in the process of fighting off some sort of change. They're tortured, and the light of their spirit spreads between what I can see and what I could only guess at.
Her description jarred a memory of something that Philip uttered. The vampire from the Tidewater told me something about a blood gift. Does that mean anything to you, Maggie?
Gran was watching Maggie intently. Friends or not, I could feel the tension that my question created. Maggie took so long to answer, I wondered if she was losing her hold on our plane of existence. Then I heard her sigh, a delicate noise like the rush of wind through distant reeds. When she spoke, her face flickered with emotion that translated into glimmering waves of uncertainty.
I've heard of it. I've only been dead for 2 years, but damn me if I haven't heard that word.
Her celestial brow clouded with anger.
None of us are sure, but the ghost of a Canadian fur trapper told me that there were vampires fighting for territory and warm bodies to fill out the ranks of their clan. He said there are only two places you don't want to be in these mountains, between a mama bear and her cubs.
She grimaced, and the lights in her skin twinkled at odds with the sour expression.
What's the other place? I asked. I already knew about the bears. We all knew about a bear and her cubs.
Maggie broke from her reverie.
Oh, right. Don't get between a master vampire and a new recruit. They'll rend you from top to bottom if they think you're stopping them from gaining power. The only thing blacker than that sludge they call blood is their hearts.
Oh, you're right about that, Mags. What did the trapper say that blood gift means?
Is it a curse?
Gran asked. Maggie chuckled, a wispy, bright sound.
You might say. Seems those vamps like to parcel out newly minted undead as a sort of reward to their... I guess you might call them their lieutenants. You know how they are about structure. Well, the master will call all of his followers to feed once a year. They'll handle clan business and give gifts and even socialize, if that's what you call it.
Maggie shuddered. I think that based on your questions and all of the activity we're seeing in between worlds, the clan meeting is happening soon.
So, the blood gift is an actual gift of blood. Not to sound dubious, but I've rarely heard of vampires doing anything quite so bland.
Gran wrinkled her nose in distaste. The vampire tendency to make everything into some grand gesture was well known. I understood why she was suspicious. If there was one thing we did understand about vampires, it was their addiction to subjugating others with style. True, they would hole up in some obscure corner of the globe, but within the dank lands they controlled, they would live with all the trappings of some ancient king. I understand your doubts, Tess. I'm not sold on the idea either. There's more to the concept of the blood gift than glorified cattle being given out like candy. Maggie's disgust was palpable, even through the curtain of Ever After separating us. I wish I'd listened to that trapper more closely, but he was a bit much for me to take. I was new to this, neighborhood when we met. Hadn't gotten my sea legs, so to speak.
How long has it been since you'd crossed?
Gran asked, her voice sympathetic. Maggie heard the note of pity and dismissed it with a grin. 2 days. I was wandering around the lake, utterly lost and more than a little scared. I couldn't tell if I was being punished or just too dumb to know how to get where I was going. Probably scared the bejesus out of a dozen families in the rental properties I'd sold over the years. I kept popping in and out in hopes of finding someone I recognized. You know, on this side, not yours. Before you ask, I didn't. I did walk in on 2 cheating spouses, a teenager smoking pot, and a guy with sleep apnea so severe I thought he was a growling demon. I waved a hand through his body just to give him a start. Thought he was going to kick off right there in mid-snore, but he made it. She giggled, a spectral laugh of such youth that it fit her apparition perfectly. I ran into Renee, the trapper, after about 3 days of getting to know the lay of the land. He hangs out up on Sylvan Point. Seems he died there and finds the place comforting.
It is beautiful, Gran admitted.
I nodded. Sylvan Point was at the north end of the lake, a little cove crowded with trees and a small crescent of rocky beach that was snug and perfect. 3 large boulders poked up from the water. Kids would bask on them in the summer like turtles.
Think he's up there now?
If he isn't, he will be tomorrow. He's never gone for more than a day or so. He stops by to say hey now and then, but he's rather attached to his own little area. Try him just before dawn. And Tess?
Maggie leaned forward to drift in the air on her magical seat.
What is it, Mags?
Gran's face was guarded.
I know you're going to ask him about the blood gift, and I can't stop you. I also know that you're doing a good thing keeping your side of the curtain clear of darkness. But I'm telling you, this might be something you want to duck, you hear me? If you can, duck and cover. I mean it. I've seen some of the vamps that come through here on their way to wherever it is their masters go when they travel. It's like a thundercloud of black oil that rolls through. Sick and cold and hungry.
She flicked her eyes at me, then slid them back to Gran.
The kid is good. She's strong. But the undead aren't like other things that come howling out of the ever after. They straddle both worlds, and they're strong, Tess, and so angry. They might whisper, but it sounds like a scream to us on this side.
She sagged into herself at the conclusion of her warning. Sparks flew from her outline. She was tiring.
Take your rest, honey. And thanks. We'll go carefully and with our eyes open. Tell the others I'll be using some heavy magic, and it's best if they get lost for a few days. Okay?
Gran said. Maggie nodded once, smiling. Then her body dissolved into bright points of magical chaff that spread upward before winking out, one at a time. Gran turned to me as she stood in a smooth motion, leaving her translucent seat behind. I really needed to learn that spell. It was just cool.
Do you cook in the morning, dear?
I looked to the east, where the delicacy of an oncoming day was diluting the depth of night. This morning, you mean? And yes, sure do. Sylvan Point is a 3-hour walk, a 20-minute car ride. And we're about 2 hours from dawn at most, if I'm any judge. I don't think we can get there before it'll be too light to see if the trapper's at home, so to speak.
Oh, I agree, Gran said cryptically. We only need to get to the water's edge. Can you cast a glamour on us so that we're relatively invisible?
She knew I could. Even without much preparation.
Yes? Are you going to tell me why?
I was brimming with curiosity. The night was full of revelatory moments. I sensed another was coming.
When my toes are wet, dear, and not a moment sooner.
grand, serene smile told me that it would be fruitless to hector her for details. So I took her arm, and together we turned for the lake. Chapter 18. Tripping the Lake Fantastic. I'll admit it. When we reached the lakeshore, I felt a hum of energy in the air around Gran that made my skin tingle. She was pulling enormous amounts of power to her in a silent series of waving gestures. It was like watching some kind of archaic Japanese theater. She plucked a water lily, then three leaves of bright green cress, and filled her hand with water. Pursing her lip, she blew across the surface of her palm's tiny reservoir, then wove the flower and cress together with her free hand, using a spell I'd never heard before. It wasn't Gaelic, and it was old. I knew that from the liquid syllables that tumbled from her lips like a morning bird call. "The glamour, if you please," Gran said. A smile played at her lips. "It's getting light. Will we make it?" I asked. She nodded, so I closed my eyes and reached inward, as a charm flared into life against my wrist. The cold thrill of magic surged up my arm, and I felt the nascent light of the morning curve around me. "We're shielded from human sight."
"Perfectly done, Carly. And now we fly."
She stepped out onto the water, trailing one hand behind her as an invitation. I gulped audibly. I had no idea that Gran could do such things. In that moment, I felt rather small. It took several quieting breaths before I could muster the courage to follow her, taking those long fingers in my hand, only because I believed in her. I floated. It was different from the sensation I'd had earlier in the ghostly cradle near Maggie's grave. This was a complete lack of weight and resistance to the surface of the lake. I laughed into the first fingers of dawn, abandoned on my face at the wonder of Gran's power and the knowledge that someday it could be mine, if I was strong enough.
"And now we travel."
Gran gave a negligent wave, and as one, we began to blur across the lake, fresh wind streaming at me like a cleansing potion of ever after. We covered the miles of gray water in seconds, only slowing when the secluded rocks of Sylvan Point hove into view. I struggled to catch my breath, but Gran seemed unfazed by the entire journey. I looked at her with newfound respect, an event that seemed to be happening about once an hour. Before I could speak, Gran brought us to a hover, mere inches above the water. She pointed to one of the boulders that hunched near the shore. It was a gray mass of friendly stone, 7 feet tall, and scored by various waterline rings that told the history of the lake's rise and retreat.
"Shh."
Renee's ghost put a finger to his lips, shushing us into silence with a wry grin. He looked like Maggie. Well, his color was similar. He was an outline of blue and silver, lighter in the center, but beautifully detailed. Renee had been a hardened man of medium height and spare frame, carved by the harsh life of mountain trapping and seasonal starvation. His face was all angles, bracketing a long nose, and lips that were full when in repose. He wore leather breeches and a patchwork of furs covering a rough woolen shirt. On his feet were soft doeskin boots, beaded in a complex pattern of snaking curls that wove up his slender calf muscles. Renee looked like the marriage of a man and wild, posed like a crane on the rock as he stared at something in the growing day. Gran pointed. A loon swam with her young, perfect in their serenity. There were 5 of them in all. The 4 chicks rode on their mother's broad back like she was a winged fairy. It was one of those things that I'll never tire of. The lonely cry of a loon is the sound of my home, as far as I'm concerned. I smiled broadly at Renee, thinking that this man had a kind eye and a heart to match. I was right.
"Maggie told me you are coming to visit. I've grown fond of her occasional presence. You know, she is a remarkable light."
He squinted into the east, then gave a Gallic shrug of such nonchalance that it was a whisper under his ghostly clothing.
"I have only a moment or two at most, You have questions about the uncertainty among our undead?
His accent was light, but present. How long have you been here, Renee? I asked. I couldn't resist.
Another time, perhaps. But suffice it to say that the only years I care about are those I have endured without Claire. She moved on some time ago, to the next place. I am fresh, but that does not mean that I have forgotten the past.
He smiled, and I surmised that Claire had been his wife, and for whatever reason, she was no longer a ghost. That, too, was new for me. I'd always assumed that there was our world and the next, but it seemed that there were more layers to the ever-after than I previously suspected. I wondered if this hole in my knowledge was by design, and made a mental note to ask Gran about it later. But for the moment, I turned to Renee and spread my hands. The blood gift. Do you know of it? In those words, I heard Gran pouring through me, and I felt a mix of honor and fear at my tersely worded question. The trapper nodded appreciatively as a beam of sun crested the trees at the eastern edge of the lake, pouring brilliance across the water in a spangled kaleidoscope. He didn't waste time, but began speaking immediately, even as his edges began to fade. The day would take him in seconds.
I only know what is has done. I've met spirits in great pain who spoke of this blood gift. They never stayed in place, and made little sense even to me. There was a veil between us that their pain made impenetrable.
His voice sagged with recollected sadness.
The blood gift is not a thing. My suspicion? A person who owns a thing that can be bestowed or taken away. The regents of the traveling undead will hold agency through this act. It will be ancient, older than anything ever made by man, and you will know its existence by the trail of souls that straddle the world between yours and mine. Their agony is... It costs you something to feel it, even through the buffer of our different planes,
Renee explained.
We live three lives, you know. The one we are born to, the one we wish for, and that which we are left with when our dreams fade as shadows at dawn. The regents who visit are bypassing all three of those lives, and their lust subverts the free will of men and women alike. It's a kind of theft that makes me wish for my body once more. Then, perhaps, I could fight with more vigor than what this husk will allow. I'm sorry, I cannot tell you more, but know that whoever makes these half-torn spirits will not hesitate to send you to my side.
He glanced at the sun and nodded his goodbye, but not before a final admonition.
Once the undead have their taste of dominion, they will kill an entire bloodline to keep it. If you have family, no distance will keep them safe from a being that can move through the ever after. You understand?
I did. That meant that my parents were at risk, despite being in New Mexico, now that I knew anything of the blood gift. As the trapper faded, Gran whispered a blessing to him, and his image disappeared like the Cheshire Cat, the smile fading last into the blooming day. Chapter 19. The Prodigal Hunk. I was nearly swaying with exhaustion when I left the diner. Between a lack of sleep and constant proximity to magic, I was drained. Intensely so, and there was nothing but a bath, cuddling Gus, and sleep in my future. As I stepped in my foyer, I tried to make straight for the bathtub, but Gus was having none of it. His series of yowling cries started immediately as he argued with me like an old man trying to use an expired coupon. I finally gave in with a muffled curse, mixing his food while a miasma of cat food and anger closed in around my head.
Hey.
Wolfric's voice was warm in my ear. I started lightly and turned to him in one smooth motion.
His dark eyes regarded me with unbridled joy, and I saw he'd tied his long blonde hair into a rough plait. The kiss of sun was on his golden-colored skin, and his glowing face told me of the days ranging far across his lands. I forgot such details at our first touch. He swept me up in his arms and kissed me, long and deep, his lips cool at first, but warming to the task. I wrapped myself around him like ivy, inhaling the woodsy scent of his clothes and that indefinable spice of his skin. He felt like home. And for the first time, I started thinking that I didn't really like him living in a cabin, in the woods, far away. Yeah, the more I thought about it, the less I liked it. "Missed you," I said into his chest. I had, but it melted away like a bad dream. I rode a wave of need and leaped onto him, wrapping my legs around his narrow hips.
"You look tired, lover."
He held me upright with one powerful arm, the other hand stroking hair from my eyes. I knew I looked like roadkill, but his gaze flipped a switch in me from which there was no going back. "Take me upstairs." My voice was low with need. He nodded, kissed me again, and began walking with me, clinging to him so tightly I couldn't tell where his mouth began and mine ended. I was tired, dizzy with lust, and hollow from using so much power. I didn't need him. I craved him. He lowered me to my bed with a delicacy I wouldn't think such a big man could manage, his eyes simmering with a desire so visceral I felt the hair rise on my arms. A smile crossed my lips as my eyes roamed over him. Then I pulled him to me so I could get lost in our frenzied reunion. We fell on each other in a tangle of caresses and sighs, and I knew that his arms were my harbor. I let go and gave in to his touch with all of the love I had saved for his return. He was wrong. I wasn't tired. At least, not until he was. Chapter 20. Carly McEwen's Day Off. We slept. Oh, did we sleep, in that gloriously together but apart way that gave me hours of blissful, dreamless rest where only our feet or hands touched occasionally. But I could still savor Wolfric's masculine warmth under the covers. It was magnificent. I woke in the pre-dawn gray because I have a thimble for a bladder, then dove back under the sheets to snuggle up to Wolfric and begin stealing his toastiness, as ordained by the first law of girlfriends. Thou shalt not be more comfortable than me while in bed. He opened one dark eye to regard me patiently while I went through my admittedly tedious routine of getting comfortable again, all while bouncing around next to him without care or worry for his well-being. After the fifth time I adjusted my legs, and my arms, and then my feet, Wolfric spoke in a tone of warning.
"Carly."
One word, but his tone was grim. "Yes?" I asked, not opening my eyes. If I'd just get my knee wedged under his ribs, it would be perfect. Ah, there. I chivied under him like a burrowing owl.
"I am only warning you once. If you do not stop wiggling that little bum against me, you're going to be boarded and looted. Is that clear?"
His big hands cupped my rear, and I realized that at least part of him was fully awake. I lay still, considering my options. After taking stock of my general condition, hair, disastrous, breath, questionable, but fully rested, I began to deliberately wiggle against him while laughing, knowing that I was entering the dragon's den while naked. Challenge accepted, sport. I rolled over on him as his teeth flashed white in the growing dawn, marveling at how good it was to be small during moments like this. Our lips met as he began to quake with laughter, sending delicious shockwaves through my skin at the mere touch of his lean body. I nuzzled into him as his arms closed over my back, thinking that there was no bed in the world big enough to keep me from this man. I was right. We spent the morning in each other's arms, venturing out like pioneers to gather supplies as our hunger pangs and thirst forced us to leave the shelter of my bed. With great detail, I explained the developments in halfway since Wolfric had gone to pay respects to his territory.
"Clowns?"
he asked suspiciously, proving that even Vikings knew evil when they heard the term.
"You mean like a jester?"
"Exactly, but these guys are tumblers, acrobats. They do magic tricks, sure, but they're mostly out of the spotlight at the circus while the ringmaster does whatever it is he does." I shrugged, dislodging a small plate with cookie crumbs that rested against my shoulder. The bed looked like a small festival had passed through, leaving the detritus of what appeared to be one hell of a good time. "I sense that the ringmaster is the key to whatever's happening. Gran thinks so, too, but we haven't proved anything yet." Wolfric regarded me through eyes that were mere slits. He thought for a long stretch of quiet before saying,
"Tell me more about the girl, the one who was killed."
I exhaled, flopping back into my mattress with frustration. Small, young, like I said, and absolutely covered with bite marks. Many of them were so well healed that the wounds looked like shadows on her skin. She was pale, really pale. I thought about her features, so doll-like and fine. She was pretty. And now she's dead.
"What did she look like?"
Wolfric asked. I could tell he was working something out. Dark hair, almost black. Her skin was milky white, but that could just be from her captivity. She was small, like me, but not so. She wasn't athletic at all, you know, just petite. I struggled to find further details about the girl's delicacy. She had the most beautiful eyes, like caramel with flecks of gold. Wolfric considered all of the details and asked,
"Was she a lady?"
He put an emphasis on lady. "You mean, like, a noble?" I looked at him with new respect. I hadn't considered anything about her rank and station, but I'm an American. Wolfric was not.
"Yes, of a gentle birth. Did her hands look like she'd ever done work? Were her feet soft, or had she gone shoeless for long periods? Did her teeth look well cared for?"
Wolfric listed points while caressing my neck with lazy strokes of his thumb. Concentration was difficult. Well, I don't know. She's a girl, not a peasant from the old country. I mean, she was found here, not in the distant past or in some European holdout to a distant time, I said, knowing that I should have looked at her more closely. The sadness of that chill room had been a bit much, and I was happy to leave it behind. Wolfric took a deep breath, then relaxed.
"I think I need to see her. Do you know what's happened to the body?"
His question startled me. "No, you know, I have no idea. Some guy named Daniel Gillen found her, and Brendan took us to go see the body, so, no, I'm not sure."
"Doesn't that strike you as unusual?"
Wolfric asked. A pang of fear spiked into my stomach, and I felt my face begin to flush with worry. Why had I forgotten to ask about the girl and what would become of her? It wasn't like me at all to discard the dead without proper regard. "It is. I don't know, it's like there's some kind of a fog around my memory of the murder. I mean, it couldn't be anything except murder, you know? Even if she'd been abused for years and her body just gave out, it was still cold-blooded killing." I felt the heat of renewed anger and tried to pull details from a memory that was hazed with something familiar. I gasped, startling Wolfric.
"What is it?"
His eyes were wide with alarm. I felt his body tense like a cat, and I put a hand on his chest to calm him. His reactions were superhuman. I was lucky he hadn't vaulted to the ceiling. "There's something in my head." I closed my eyes and tried to relax, but my heart was banging against my ribs like a bill collector at the door. There was something in me. It was nebulous, shifty, and distant. I felt... no. I reached inward with my witch mark to probe delicately at the diaphanous thing that danced at the periphery of my senses. Wolfric lay still, his breathing even. I could feel his eyes on me as I dove toward my own soul, seeking something that had been hidden until Wolfric's question parted the curtain to give me a hint at the secret beyond. I'm pushing too hard. Need to relax. It's just under the surface. I have to let it come to me. It's slippery like a bubble. I don't want to crush it, I grouched. Wolfric nodded in understanding.
So, tell me of other things.
He smiled and my cheeks flushed. Okay, well, there was a murder and I thought it was Anna, but then I thought it was her brother and...
His bark of laughter cut me off. Alex, a killer?
I delivered 3 full seconds of horizontal stink eye before responding. As I was about to mention before the peanut gallery interrupted me...
What is a peanut gallery? Is it some kind of sailing vessel?
Wolfric interrupted. Again. I bit back a tart rejoinder, reminded myself that he had been marooned in the forest for the better part of a millennium. No, it's an expression used to keep mouthy boyfriends quiet when their smarter, more intuitive lover is trying to explain something to them, I replied with arch dignity. He waved, a curiously graceful gesture from his prone position. It made the muscles of his arm ripple deliciously, and I looked away, wondering if this was what men tolerated around a beautiful woman every day. I'm pretty sure my thoughts were some sort of human resources violation. If I worked in an office, which I don't. So I placed a hand on his chest to savor the thrum of his energy. It was primal and thrilling, making me lick my lips unwillingly. As I was saying, dear heart, I didn't even know Alex existed. I thought he was some sort of evil overlord or something, but once I met him, we talked. I can say with complete honesty that I like him much more than Anna, I told him in the understatement of the century. He snorted, then smiled with a wily leer.
Go on.
His hands began to wander again, and the room heated up. I knew I'd better wrap this whole chit-chat thing up quickly before things got interesting. As I was saying, you lech, why are you looking at me like that? I stopped mid-sentence at his intense stare.
Could you be under a geese? Or some sort of spell?
I thought it over. That was actually possible, if not likely, but the chances that someone could cast magic around 2 witches without either of them sensing it... No way. Not Gran, and I didn't feel anything off in my castings. I'd been taught that magical compulsion on a witch leads to their power being knocked askew. I'd used several spells since seeing the body of that lonely girl, and I didn't feel any different. But I wouldn't know if something was missing, either. That worried me. I groaned and began to rise from the bed, barely holding my desire to kick my tiny feet in anger. Wolfric grasped at me, but I slid out into the unkind air of my bedroom. It's your fault. You gave me an idea, big guy, and now I have to see it through.
I did no such thing. I would not willingly inspire you to decamp from this nest of our passion.
Wolfric was indignant, but grinning slightly. I paused in pulling on clothes to wave a finger at him. See, that kind of old-fashioned speech might work with the Bronte sisters, but you can save the poetry. I leaned forward to kiss him. You've already got me. Save your energy for other worthy pursuits, me lord. I bobbed an awkward curtsy and turned to leave.
Where are you going?
Wolfric asked in a remarkably capable whine. To my cellar. I need to perfect a spell, and it's going to take a while, I said, even as my mind began to shift into super witchy mode.
May I observe?
I stopped. I never let anyone other than Gran see me in my cellar. It was sacred to me. I leaned in the doorway, thinking. The man before me was no ordinary soul, and I'd let him into my home by choice. I shared a bed, and secrets, and fears with him. The decision was made. You may, but quietly. I don't know what will happen with magic of this type while you're in the room, I announced. His brows quirked as he stood, pulling pants on before I could rescind my offer.
Why? Is the spell based in sunlight?
His question made sense. There wasn't much that could hurt a hybrid vampire, but sunshine was certainly on that list. Sort of.
I'm going to craft a spell that will tag every undead in the area with a glyph that only I can see. The risk is minimal, but it might, tingle a bit. I hedged my bets on the description. My doctor told me a shot in the bum would tingle, and she turned out to be a bit optimistic in her assessment of what constituted a tingle versus white-hot pain. We'll need to go out and get some things, but it shouldn't take long. He nodded decisively.
I accept. I'll behave, even if your spell is a bit more aggressive than you anticipate.
I pointed downstairs. To the kitchen first for coffee, then magic. Even witches need caffeine. It's science. Chapter 21 Witch Switch. By a few things, I meant some specific plants. Actually, I needed switches cut from three different trees. The remaining spell ingredients were already in my house, courtesy of eBay. Over here, the willow, I said, selecting a robust example that drooped toward a wet finger of lake water jutting into the meadow behind my house.
The whole thing? It's a rather large tree.
Wolfric shaded his eyes, sizing the tree up with professional intensity. No, tough guy, just a switch. Preferably one from a lower branch, moist and springy. Here, this'll do nicely, I said, seizing a long, thin limb in my hand and snipping it with my silver shears. Hold, please. Our next victim is a crabapple that lurks at the edge of the park.
A fruit tree. Does that have meaning?
Wolfric asked, slowing his step to match my more limited stride. His dark eyes roved over the township, which was abuzz with the action of morning. Mm-hmm. The willow is a seeker, and the crabapple is thorny. It will bind my spell to the targets, but not in a manner that would alarm them. The entire purpose of this is to tag them, not ring a bell in the face that tells them their cover is blown, I explained. We walked across the street to a boisterous crabapple that would be heavy with hard little fruit come September. I snipped a fine, Y-shaped sample and repeated my directions to Wolfric. Then we made off back toward my house. The slim sticks looked like straw in his hands, but he smiled patiently, knowing that all would be revealed in my cellar.
What is the last component? Will it foment light?
I stopped. How did you know that? I asked, the surprise on my face giving way to a grin. Wolfric was no fool. He saw angles from hints.
It seems obvious. You'll need to charge the glyph, correct? Since you explained the other qualities of these two lethal weapons I carry.
He whipped them through the air like rapiers.
I can surmise the third element.
Easy, Zorro. But yes, I'm going to use a fire maple for the third. It's the potential of the tree, not the immediate quality. In the fall, the colors will be more brilliant than anything, save a sumac, but the wood takes better to our family magic, I explained.
Who is Zorro? It sounds rather ominous.
Wolfric narrowed his eyes with suspicion. He didn't appreciate my cultural references, but I guess anything after Beowulf would be new to him. A swordsman of legend, quite the dresser, good with the ladies too, I said as we neared my house.
Ah, then I approve the use of that name for me.
His grave reply made me snort. He really could be dignified when he was wearing pants. I'm glad. There's the tree. We cut one more and then breakfast. I want to be fully prepared for this magic because, if I'm right, there will be a shockwave through our lands that brands every undead in the area. If I'm wrong, I shuddered lightly, despite being in the brilliant sun.
You may have callers at your door?
Wolfric concluded amiably.
Exactly. I sounded wary, even to my own ears. I should let it be known, dear. I don't wish to be erupted when we are at our rest.
A sly sideways grin told me his intentions had nothing to do with resting, but I immediately knew that he would defend me with fang and fist if needed. Good enough for me. Let's go make some magic. At his raised brow, I added, with a spell. The other kind can wait until later. Chapter 22 Tag. You're dead. Wulfric was good as his word. He sat quietly on a rough wooden chair that had been in my cellar long enough that it was brittle with age. It creaked ominously as he lowered himself into it with a suspicious glare. Gus awarded Wulfric a piercing gaze as part of his duties as my familiar, then began to lick one paw, casually. My cellar is rather dark, but in a friendly way. There are ancient hemlock shelves where generations of people have stored pickles and jam, and anything else the well-tilled backyard garden might yield. The floor is field slate with a center area of hard-packed dirt, and the walls climb upward in uneven stacks of stone with resolute bands of mortar between. The beams are dark with age, hand-hewn, and solid-looking. A long bench served as my mixing station. Above it, huddled jars of plants, with labels written in my own small script. I looked at the array approvingly, placed the fresh switches on the table, and began to focus my mind for the task at hand. To his credit, Wulfric may have been a statue. I spared him no glances as I felt my power begin to grow. Each charm on my wrist began to assume that liquid tingle that can only come from a clear mind and busy hands. I'd need a brazier, a small ring of stones, and cotton cloth in which to place a small amount of aromatic lavender. I began to explain myself to Wulfric so that he would understand what was happening. My mental state was so relaxed I didn't fear speaking aloud. I could feel the magic blooming within me, and I knew this spell would be powerful. "I'm creating what amounts to a waking dream," I began, as I crushed the lavender and wrapped it in the soft cloth. I can reach across the veil, but the beings I'm going to mark are neither here nor there. They are between places, and for that I need things that are dead and alive. I put each stone in a careful ring around the rough stone brazier. Here I let my intent overwhelm the natural tendency of disorder. With the power humming in my heart, each rock was placed just so by the strength of my will. In moments, I had a circle of such perfection that I doubted an engineer could do better. My lips curled in pleasure. The simplest things are often hardest, but the circle lay waiting for me as I lowered the brazier into the true center. There was a dull flash as the circle accepted my addition, then the circle closed with a low hum. The air began to charge with the sense of an oncoming storm, and I sat down in a pose of complete relaxation, ready to assume command of the power around me. The living will of these trees will form a purpose. That purpose, with the lavender, will seek and pierce the veil between worlds. I leaned the switches together like old friends. And now, I send this power seeking. I closed my eyes to feel the magic, shaping it with my will, until I could see the spell as a luminous hound, relentless and quick. I let the spell run wild with the command. Lowering my voice to a rough command, I growled, "Sursa! Halt, skivith!" Three things happened instantly. The switches stretched skyward, flaring into golden light before vanishing with a white flash. The tinkling of distant bells faded into nothingness, and Wulfric gave a yelp like a scalded dog. "Did you feel anything?" I asked in panic. If he sensed any aspect of my magic, I'd just given away any advantage or element of surprise. I'd also probably pissed off a few vampires, which wasn't the best move I could make.
"No, I just... you were a bit abrupt."
He smiled before adding,
"And loud."
I let the fog of magic clear from my mind before turning to him. My smile died. Babe, mind coming over here by the window? The single window in my cellar is a hazy panel mounted high up on the south wall. It's festooned with spider webs and the dust of ages. In other words, I'm never going to touch it, and it will remain dirty until my house falls in over my head. Despite this grimy, spidery condition, there was enough light coming in that I could see Wulfric's face as he stood with a puzzled look, looking over me in the semi-darkness.
What is it?
Wolfric asked, slow and suspicious. He knew me too well. I looked him over like a friend who'd just gotten a horrible haircut, then took the plunge. You got a, symbol glowing on your cheek? He did, but only the faintest outline. There was a blurred glyph pulsing on the side of his jaw, and I knew that my spell worked. As a half-breed, Wolfric was more human than vampire, and that he was actually alive. That meant I could identify every undead being in Halfway with a simple glance. I didn't know if it was good or bad news. At the time of my casting, I'd been filled with the radiance of certainty, but now I wasn't sure. Sometimes getting what you want is the worst thing possible, but I hitched up my big girl pants and gave my boyfriend a confident kiss. I wasn't going to waste a day off huddled in my cellar like a frightened rabbit. I knew I was a good witch with powerful allies, and to top it off, I was hungry. Let's go for waffles. My treat, I told Wolfric as we ascended the dusty wooden stairs. His voice carried over my ears, even though he stood behind me in the stairwell.
Fine, but I will add my own syrup. You're a bit thrifty with it, in my opinion.
I resisted sticking my tongue out because I'm an adult. Also, he wouldn't have seen it, so I settled for a mumbled whatever as I pushed the door open to my kitchen. Like I said, I'm an adult, and I do adulty things.
Chapter 23. Tableside Service. Wolfric eyed my waffles with speculation. We were busy eating our orders at a picnic table across from the diner, under the spreading branches of a slender maple, whose branches were positioned just right. From our wedge of cool shade, the lake was a mirror broken into countless dancing pieces, each playing games with a single ray of the sun. It was perfect, if you didn't consider that after we had our al fresco breakfast, we were going to see a corpse.
Tell me again why the Carly is named after you. There are three waffles. That seems like a reasonable amount for a person of your appetites,
Wolfric said, reining in his desire to make a short joke. He averted his eyes and stuck half of an entire waffle into his mouth, grinning. He really was a Viking at heart. The stuffed cheeks gave him plausible deniability about answering any stinging retorts I might direct at him. So, for the moment, he was also a smart Viking. My phone belled, and I read the incoming text. It's Brendan. He'll pick us up at my house for the drive. Says we're going to the medical facility in Saranac Lake.
Why there? Wolfric asked.
Saranac was well outside his normal range, and I wondered if he could handle crossing that much running water. I could see the same concern in his face. That's the nearest morgue. But you'd better stay here. It's too risky, I concluded. He nodded, not in the mood to fight over what could be dangerous in more than one way. Not only would his vampiric nature rebel against so much flowing water, but explaining a large, exotic man with no recorded birth could get dicey if we were questioned.
I would ask you something about this examination, Wolfric said grimly.
Violence danced under his words. Name it. I took his hand. His fingers were long, and they curled around my entire palm with ease. He closed his eyes and thought. When he opened them, they were dark and serious.
Take an image of her face for me, and perhaps any wounds you might see.
I nodded slowly. The question of why hung between us.
I wish to put a face to this affront, and if the wounds are visible, I can tell you what caused them. I've had 1,000 years among the predators of this place, and there is no claw or fang unknown to me.
A sigh that was heavy with unwanted experience passed through his lips, and I leaned in to kiss him. I won't be gone long. You can have a staring contest with Gus, or you can sleep. Your choice, I told him as we rose from the table.
He responded with a derisive snort. That cat never blinks. I can feel him passing judgment on me at every turn, like a fishwife who has pretty daughters.
I laughed at his frustration. Gus was judging him, just as he did the same to every human who came within range of the golden feline eyes.
Don't fret, love. It means he tolerates you, and that's far better than the other option.
Which is?
Wolfric asked as we crossed the street in front of my house. He can, cough a hairball at will. He's done so before, and given the chance, he can make your life rather gross, I said, thinking of a date 2 years earlier that had ended badly, thanks to Gus's displeasure. And I wondered why